Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready for more propaganda? Well, you're in the wrong place at the right time. Columbo Chronicles is for critical thinkers. Let's welcome the consumer advocate for justice. Here's the Rose, Rose Columbo.
Hi, everyone. It's the Rose, Rose Columbo, right here for you on this beautiful Wednesday, May 31st. Can you believe it? We're headed into June. We're halfway through the year. Hard to believe, isn't it? Well, is America awake yet? Did you know I coined that term? America needs to be awake now. Wake up, America. That was the term I coined, and I want you to wake up now because we have a fantastic guest coming up, and I'm going to tell you about her in just a little bit. She's going to join us on Authors and Experts, the world of authors and experts just for you. And also, I want to let you know that I'm going to bring back the Justice Club because there's very little justice in the world, and you can get some justice, but not very much justice unless you're very wealthy. And then, of course, you can buy justice because justice is for sale. It is a big business. And I wrote the first book, Fight Back Legal Abuse, just for you. In 2010, they went global in magazines around the world and newspapers, and I was on local and national radio talking about injustices because I started a grassroots movement way back when to help victims of legal abuse become survivors, and that is so important today. And so I'm going to bring back the Justice Club, so listen to this little tidbit here.
The Justice Club is back on Columbo Chronicles live podcast. Join Rose Columbo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
That's right, little justice. We need to bring back big justice. And today, that's a little bit about what we're going to be talking about with our very special guest, Sarita Stevens. And she is a forensic nurse. And what is a forensic nurse? She's going to explain that to us. And I'll tell you a little bit about Sarita. She's a popular returning guest. And Sarita has written almost 40 books. Can you believe that? 40 books. And not only that, that is to her credit. And she also has been a registered nurse and is a registered nurse, and she's taught at USC after being reared in Chicago. She worked as an investigative reporter at CBS in Chicago and helped expose a hospital in the Windy City that pretended to heal cancer patients. She will fill in all of her latest literary works. And she has a strong opinion on what makes a bestseller, notably in the fields of mystery and suspense. She also will share her credits with us in the world of film. She has assisted many attorneys, so have I, come to think about it, as an expert witness. And she really likes to help people, and so do I, as an advocate for justice. So we're on the same path here. Bringing justice to the world to as many people as they can. And that makes the world, as she says, as a win-win situation. And as much as we can, Sarita Stevens, she will tell you about her website, about her books, and about being a forensic nurse, because Sarita Stevens has published, like I said, almost 40 books from mystery novels to a description of poisonous plants. Very intriguing. So just in a moment, after these important messages, we're going to ask her to explain how she got involved as a forensic nurse and tell us what is a forensic nurse before we talk about her wonderful experiences and books. So don't touch that dial because we will be back in just a moment.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up because we're back with Colombo Chronicles Live, and we are about to turn into the Justice Club included on Colombo Chronicles because we're going to talk to a forensic nurse, Sarita Stevens, and she has a wealth of information, and it has to do with justice as well. And so why don't we just say hello to Sarita Stevens and welcome her to Colombo Chronicles. Hi, Sarita. Are you there?
I'm here. Good afternoon, Rose. Nice to see you again.
Nice to talk to you again, Sarita. It's been a while. And since it has been a while, we always have new listeners, Sarita, as you know, on the radio and TV shows and all that, because you're involved in the media as well as an author and a forensic nurse. But Sarita, for those who don't know anything about your background, would you explain a little bit about your background and how you became a forensic nurse?
Well, I grew up on a series called Cherry Ames. Nancy Drew, she was solving crimes while she was nursing as a student nurse and in various roles as a cruise nurse, as a store nurse, as a clinic nurse. And so that's what I wanted to do, I thought, when I grew up. But of course, when I got to nursing school, it wasn't anything like that. And I couldn't do that. But then I found somebody online in 1990 that had a handle called Sleuth RN. And I found out about forensic nursing. It was started in the 1970s by emergency room nurses who found that the sexual assault victims were not being treated well, not being treated equally, and their complaints were being ignored, because when you're raped, you have both internal and emotional injuries as well as physical injuries, and so they developed a system to investigate it more thoroughly, and found that many of the rape victims were not being processed properly, that their rape kits were not being developed. In fact, there's many rape kits still years and years and years in storage that haven't been developed. Mercer Haggerty of SVU has a site called Joyous Helping, where she helps others who have rape kits to be developed more. And anyway, so I went to the seminar and found out about what we as forensic nurses do. And besides sexual assault, we do domestic violence. I work with a lot of domestic violence victims, human trafficking, elder abuse, child abuse, arson, motor vehicle accidents, workman's comp, and death investigation, as well as legal nurse consulting. And I also work as an expert witness for the courts in psychiatric cases. So because nursing was my major field in nursing. So that basically is what a forensic nurse does.
Well, that's a heck of a lot to do.
Yes.
And but you can't just be a nurse. You actually, I know you went to the International Association of Forensic Nurses, AFN, that started
right.
you off as a forensic nurse. And then you also taught at USC about forensic nursing. And so it also, you know, because it does involve you in law enforcement, how does law enforcement feel about forensic nurses, and how often do they use them for homicides, let's say?
Many police forces have a forensic nurse on their staff to work with them. Some of the older cops are still the old boy system, you know. You nurses mm-hmm. go work with the bed. And also many of the older doctors feel the same way, too. They feel that we're taking their patients, and the hospital administrators don't want to pay us overtime, because a good forensic investigation of a rape case takes maybe 3 to 4 hours and not just 15, 20 minutes in the ER. So they don't like paying overtime and stuff like that. And we still have a fight on our hands sometimes for being paid properly. We do many police force and lawyers work with us, and we help them investigate and understand the medical aspect of what they're looking at. For instance, if we go into a crime scene, we can look at the drugs that the patient, that the deceased has, and say, okay, he had a heart attack. He had heart condition. This is what he had. This is what we need to investigate more as his possible cause of death, rather than saying automatically it's a homicide or a suicide or whatever. So we give a different perspective to what the police are seeing. And many of them appreciate us.
Oh, I'm sure. And so as a forensic nurse, do you have to use special equipment? Do you take photographs, and or do you review the photographs that the law enforcement has or insurance companies, and look for evasive clues and so forth?
We do. We're taught to be suspicious of everything. We're taught to teach rape victims not to wash themselves before they come to the ER, not to change their clothes, that at each piece of clothing goes on a separate clean sheet. It's wrapped in paper, not plastic. If it's plastic, deteriorates the evidence. It has to be dried thoroughly. It has to be sealed properly for custody of evidence, chain of custody. It has to be signed off properly so that nobody can tamper with it. We do take photographs with a colonoscopy, and other photographs. We measure them with different forensic scales and say, you know, this looks like maybe it was an iron that hit the person. What is the pattern analysis? What looks like a belt was used or a guitar string? What was used on the person? These are things that we learn. We learn wound investigations. You know, we learn what type of bullet was used. We can tell where the blood spatter analysis was, how far away the shot was from the victim. All sorts of things we learn in the forensic education.
That's amazing. So do you have to write up reports on everything you find, and then can those be subpoenaed along with yourself as an expert witness in the courts?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes.
Uh-huh.
As nurses, we can educate, we can talk to the jury as lay people and help them understand what the doctors are saying. Most doctors will talk in medicalese and the jury won't understand it, and we can explain to the jury what exactly is happening. And in some cases, some lawyers prefer nurses rather than doctors as their expert witnesses.
Yes, I would think so, because the jury is the one who's going to make a decision, and maybe even some judges don't understand, you know, all the medical terms as well. So you can break it down for them in a layperson's terms. And actually, I think you know, that's what's needed, because most people don't understand medical terms or legalese terms and so forth. And so did you have to take legal courses? Like I went, because I was an advocate for justice, I took paralegal courses. Did you have to do that? I mean, did you do that? You didn't have to.
We take forensic courses, and there are some legal terms in our courses, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's kind of important if you're going to be testifying in a court of law, working with the lawyers. And I also work for the sheriff's department, too, so I understand what you're talking about. But they didn't have forensic nurses that we've ever heard of until you came along and appeared on my show. And that was the first time I ever heard of a forensic nurse, which I think is fantastic, because it does help solve crimes sometimes that, you know, little details are missed. And even the police can overlook a detail when they're taking down a report. I know that for a fact.
Well, we can interview patients differently and relate to them differently than the police do. Many people are, I won't say afraid, but are more frozen when it comes to being interviewed by police. They're scared of what they're saying, whereas they trust the nurse better.
Mm. Yeah, I think a lot of people trust the nurse. So, Sarita, you wrote almost 40 books to your credit, and among those books, you wrote The Forensic Nurse, The Book of Poisons, and Bagels for Tea. What do you think is your favorite book, and do they all relate to being a forensic nurse, or are there different?
Oh, no. I write all sorts of types of books. I write young adult mysteries. I write historical novels. I write Logan's Land is a Western with a female protagonist. Red Sea, Dead Sea, Bagels for Tea is a Jewish grandmother mystery series with St. Martin's Press. I wrote the original, I wrote Cagney and Lacey, a prequel of who they were before they became cops. The Book of Poisons I wrote because in my mystery writer group, I realized that many of my fellow writers didn't understand poisons and how they worked. And all the material available was in medicalese. So I wrote the Book of Poisons in plain English for writers to understand how poisons worked. And it's been translated in several different languages already, and it is available online as well. And it's been used on several different shows, Law and Order, and I've been a consultant for Discovery Channel and for other things as well. I also help other writers with their medical, poison, and forensic questions.
Well, that's interesting because they just accused Putin of poisoning some leader. And also, people hear about these poisonings, you know. And I also had an Emmy Award-winning journalist on my show, and she was at the peak of her career when she went blind. And it seemed like overnight, but she wasn't feeling well for a while. And her friends who were close to them alleged that they thought that her ex-husband, who was her husband at the time, was slowly poisoning her. So it's really interesting when you talk about poisons, because sometimes poisons don't kill you. Maybe they do other harm to your body, right?
They can damage you in other ways. Yeah, sure. And they can also be used to gaslight you as well, make you think you're going crazy.
Wow. Well, some people are going crazy without poison, but
that's true.
So, yeah, I think poisons are really interesting because another story was that my friend who I worked with in the beauty industry, she got a call one day her mother was in the hospital was worse because the nurse grabbed the wrong bottle and gave her a slug of poison. And
medicine mistakes are one of the most common mistakes in the hospital because a lot of the bottles look similar, and we have to be very careful what drug we're giving.
Yeah, that was pretty shocking. So you have a story as an investigative reporter I thought was kind of interesting. I don't know what happened, but can you tell us a little bit about it at CBS in Chicago when you helped expose the hospital
heal
cancer patients?
Yeah, that was, that's right. When I was going to Columbia College, I worked as an intern at CBS in Chicago, and there was a hospital in northern Illinois about an hour away from Chicago, and they had me go in as a nurse and work, and they were doing alternative cancer cures like high colonics and herbs and stuff like that to supposedly cure cancer, and having people sign their fortunes and stuff over to the hospital for research and stuff. And most of these people were not getting better or dying. And I helped CBS investigate them, and they found out who I was and tried to take my license away. And CBS did protect me and take care of me for that. It was quite interesting. And I'm working on another story right now about illegal transplants. Chinese use political prisoners from a certain religious group, Falun Dafna, and they take them and they take their organs while they're still living, and then they kill the patient, kill the victims, and sell the organs overseas for enormous prices. And a lot of people are using those organs and falling prey to them. And it's like Israel has forbidden any of their patients or doctors to use Chinese organs for that reason, because it's a human rights violation. And I'm hoping that what I write will, as a fictional thing, because people learn from fiction almost more than they learn from facts, will educate people about what's happening
there. Well, actually, I've read about that. I read real articles about it where they actually grab people off the streets, even kids, whatever, and they don't even medicate the person, even if they drag them to a hospital, and they just take their organs. And that's really, really scary.
Usually they'll shoot them with something or stun them and something like that and inject them with a drug to keep their organs more viable. And then they take the organs out, and then they kill them.
Yeah, a former friend of mine who worked for the government and left the government became a whistleblower a long time ago when I was on AM/FM radio shows on KIEV, KGR, a bunch of those. And he said, all these guys shocked the heck out of me. And he talked about that, and that was like in the 90s. That the Chinese were shooting even kids, and then they just take their organs. And then I also
it started in the 1990s,
read,
when the religion became popular.
Yeah, and I exposed that on my radio shows back then because I let him on my show. And so also I read that even along our borders, that these cartels, with these open borders are taking control and doing the same thing, organ harvesting. And that's pretty frightening when you think about, all of these unidentified people from third world countries who are controlling our borders, and they are making billions of dollars killing people and men, women, children. Doesn't even matter. It's really great that you're writing about that because it's real. I don't care what
it is real. It's scary and it's real.
It's scary as heck. And so when people say to me, you can't, you got to let them in because they're dead. I know you got to let people who are identified and approved to be legal and upright citizens come in, not just everybody and anybody. I mean, come on, But anyway, going back to your work, I wanted to ask you a question. What makes a bestseller notable in the fields of mystery, suspense, or whatever they're writing about? And share some of your
thrillers
that you like.
Thrillers are really popular right now. And they've always been popular because people like to feel that there's justice being done. In fact, that's how I started writing historical novels, where the male would say, oh, you will do this, or I'll put you over my knee, you will obey me. And I realized almost that was almost like domestic violence. They were like abusers. So I started writing mysteries where justice occurred. And then I started writing scripts. And there is a big difference, by the way, you know, between scripts and books. I mean, I loved your political book, but it was hard to, I found it hard to translate it. Adapting it, I found would be difficult because you had a lot of thoughts in it.
Yeah.
You can't have a lot of thoughts. You have to have action rather than thoughts.
Yeah, well, I was more of a, well, I've had a lot of people from the film industry interested in it. And but it's different from what you write in you write the thrillers and things like that. But it's gotten a lot of interest in from the film industry, and it's a different genre though. It's totally from what you actually do, and so
yeah.
I understand that. And so everything's different, you know. I mean, the cartoons, the animations, all of that, it's different, and everybody has their specialty. And so, that's understandable and everything. Some people like to read romances. Some people like thrillers.
Ooh.
Some like mystery, you know. So it just depends. Some like horror stories. You know,
there is a big difference in writing scripts and books, and people don't understand. It's a different mindset when you're writing a script versus writing a book. In writing a book, you can get into the head of everybody, you can get into their thoughts, you can go from character to character, whereas in a script, you try to stay with one main character as much as possible, and you have to be in present tense, and everything has to be shown as action, not as thinking. And it's
mm-hmm.
hard for some people. It's less equals more in writing scripts. You have to be very careful with your words and make every word count. Whereas you can be more flowery in a book.
Well, because you have to condense everything into an hour or an hour and a half, and that's not easy into an hour, or even explain it in a press release. You know what I'm saying? It's not that simple either, as people think.
No, it's not.
So that's why I wanted to bring that up to people who love to write and to authors. And so... I mean, like Disney, I mean, they do all these beautiful animation stories and Marvel and all these. And I mean, it's amazing what they do now. And I mean, they can even use humans with animation. I mean, it's amazing what's
yeah.
going on now.
Some of them are really great.
And so it's a totally different world. You know, they can do almost anything they want. Yeah, mine's more of a Jurassic Park. So in the world of film, you've assisted... You know, probably some directors and authors, directors and producers, maybe, with your scripts. And how does that work out with your? Are you present when they're doing your films or looking at your scripts?
Oh no! Well, it depends. It depends on the studio. It depends on the film company. But most of the time, the writers, unless they need a change of scenery written right then. Most of the time, the writers are not invited to the filming. Sometimes they are, not always. But it depends what the contract reads. It depends what type of contract your agent negotiates for you, whether you're allowed to go on the set or not, you know, or what the producer or director feels, if they feel uncomfortable with the writer on the set. Because many times when they're adapting a story, whole scenes have to be changed. You have to condense scenes. And the writer will say, well, that's not what I wrote, you know, and they might get upset and stuff like that. So, you know, when you sell your story, your book to Hollywood, you have to be prepared that it's going to come out totally different or somewhat different at least.
That's what a lot of writers tell me who, not a lot of writers that have had their films made, but people who have written books that had their films made, their books turned into a movie, they say they didn't recognize the book when they saw it on the screen, that it was changed. And they get disappointed, some of them, and others, you know, they thought it was fantastic because they got their name on the screen. But a lot of people, you know, who who over the years who have had their books turned into movies say, you know, they're changed by the time they get to the screen. But you can't put everything from a book into an hour or an hour and a half.
Right.
You know?
And at the time you want to look at the time thing of the movie. It's hard to make a generational movie, you know, with characters changing and getting older and stuff like that. So you want to condense the time period in a screenplay.
Mhm. Yeah. And some people, you know, also take books to live theater. Sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. One of the best plays I've ever seen was my dad's Jewish and my mom's Italian. And it played over in your area, in the Los Angeles area, Hollywood. And my daughters and I went to see it. And I kept thinking to myself as a writer, how's this guy going to pull off this two-hour play all by himself? And he's going to be really boring. And I'm going
Which
in
play
thinking
was
it's going to be really boring. It was my dad's Jewish and my mom's Italian.
Which play was
and
that?
That was the name of it.
Okay. Oh, that was the name of it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
My dad's Jewish and my mom's Italian. And I'm telling you, that was one of the best plays I've ever seen. He pulled it all off. My daughters and I were laughing through the whole thing. I mean, people probably thought we were crazy, but to us, we could relate to everything he was saying, and we were laughing so hard.
I'm sure.
And, you know, because we're Italian. Jews are very much like Italians, you know.
Very much so.
So we were laughing a lot, but I'm telling you, this guy did such a great job. I can't remember his name or anything, but he did such a great job, and it was one of the best. I say it's one of the best because not only did he keep us laughing through the whole thing, he caught our attention. We stayed awake. There have been plays I fell asleep in, and we actually did not fall asleep. We were energetic about it, and so that's why I called it one of the best plays I've seen, because that is not easy to do.
No, it's not. No, you're right.
No.
Especially with the one act.
No.
I mean, a one-person play.
Oh, that was the first time I ever saw a one-person play. That was amazing. And so let's get over to what's happening with you now since the strike is over.
Well, the strike is not over, no. No, the strike is still going on. It started May 2nd, and it's in its fourth week. And so far, as far as I know, I myself am not yet a WGA member. I narrowly missed it because Hallmark was going to buy something of mine, and then the woman who was buying it left, and the other woman who came next didn't want to buy what the other woman had. So I narrowly missed getting into the guild, but I still respect the guild, and I'm not negotiating with anybody at the moment because of the strike. But I do have some people that are planning on optioning my material after Nursing the Evidence is my fictional scripted series, character-driven series about forensic nurses. And they're also interested in Heaven Help Me, which is a female buddy crime drama where the ghost mother-in-law comes back and helps the detective solve crimes. And they're interested in that as well. So... And I have quite a few other things that they're going to be working on as well with me. So, but no, as far as I know, the studios have still refused to negotiate with us. In fact, Netflix, there was just a thing in Synopsis today that the Netflix CEOs are making millions of dollars, I think $133 million salary, and if they paid the writers what we're asking, it would only be $68 million. So I mean, it's peanuts compared to what they're taking for their salaries, and they still don't want to negotiate. They still don't feel that we have a right to have a real living. So as far as I know, the strike is still going on, and for another month or so at least.
I don't think authors are all that much. Paid very well, period, by the publishing companies.
Oh no, they are not.
They're making all this money from your long years of experience and effort and education and knowledge and hard work. And then most authors today are doing self-publishing, so they're putting out a lot of money. And then they have all these different requests for more money for this, more money for that, you know. And so people have hawked their homes, you know, trying to become a bestseller. And
right.
I think that, you know, a lot of people have to just be of the mindset that, you know, you have to do what you're doing out of love and passion. And if it's to help other people, if it's just to tell your stories, whatever it is, that there's going to be a lot of competition and
a lot of
difference to even, you know, to keep trying to get somebody to pay attention to you and your books. And and so it's not an easy thing to be noticed by, you know, a traditional publisher and to buy your book or to get that movie deal.
It's much harder these days. Yes, it is much harder these days.
Yeah. And I think because of self-publishing, there's so many more books out there now that everybody's writing a book right online or can have AI write the book, which I find is not fair.
I think that would be very odd.
Yeah, so but going back to the pay, I mean, most authors that I ever talked to, unless a traditional publisher or a film company picked up their book, they never
publisher these days, you're lucky if you get maybe $500, a couple thousand for an advance, if they even pay advances. Many publishers these days are not even paying very much in advance against the royalties. And most publishers are not promoting you. You have to do your own self-promotion to get your book out there for the most part, unless you are a big, big name like my friends, the Kellermans. They're already established names, so the publisher will promote them. But us smaller authors, we don't get the promotion budget. We have to pay for our own promotion.
You have to pay for your own promotion, and you have to do a lot of hard work and you have to make a lot of effort, and you have to just keep plugging away, you know. But even these publishers, though, they don't pay that much in royalties, no matter how many books are sold. And so I find I think it's better to try and sell your own books than whether you have to do conferences, whatever you have to do, you know. I mean, like, you can go online and you can find all these different courses that you can take to try and figure out how to do a virtual conference correctly and make it inviting and stuff. And none of that's easy and very time consuming. You have to do a lot of listening and reading. Yeah. And so unless you're computer tech, you know, it's a lot more difficult for most people. So it's not as easy as you see where these people come on and they go, oh, you can make this and you can make that. Just, you know, just do this and just do that. Just take my course and see me this and that. It's not that simple. And
no, it
so
is not that simple.
No. And so anybody that's selling you, you know, selling you snake
oil, it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of business acumen to be able to self-publish your book, because you have to do not only the writing, the cover, the editing, the self-promotion, the distribution. There's a lot of stuff you have to do with your self-publishing.
Yeah, unless you have a big name, you know, you're going to be, you know, taking those steps, or you're going to give up, one or the other. And but sometimes you can get a break, you know. I mean, I've also sometimes, you know, like, so many books have been, as you know and I know, many people know, were rejected, just like actors and actresses were rejected, and you know, and then they get that one break, just that one break. And then, you know, and that's what it is. It's getting that one break, you know. And so, I don't know. So, in the meantime, you have to do what you just love doing and creating and promoting yourself.
Pretty
much, right? So, I'm glad you said that, because, and now I'm confirmed that I'm not alone in that thinking. That you better be very proactive if that's what you want to do.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. So I also heard a little birdie told me that you're going to be lecturing about poisons at the Regency era for the Novelist Conference in July.
Right. The Regency Novelist Conference is having me lecture about poisons in the Regency era. And so I'm talking about a lot of plant poisons and natural, like snakes and bugs and stuff like that, as well as the favorites of arsenic and, you know, arsenic, strychnine, and cyanide, which have been available for a long time and been used by many famous poisoners, you know. So, yes, mm-hmm. I am going to be talking about that. And that's going to be in July.
Because it's really interesting because a lot of people are taking prescription drugs, as you know, millions and millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And they get poisoned from prescription drugs. And a lot of the prescription drugs are also come from different types of plants and herbs and so forth. And so that's a really interesting topic because you can also, connect it to prescription drugs, not just, you know.
Oh, yeah. Many of them overdose and stuff like very easy to overdose if you don't read the labels and don't understand what you're taking.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Or you see those commercials where they say, you know, take this, you got a headache, take this pill, and then they'll say really fast, you know, but it could cause liver damage, kidney damage, and death.
Yeah. And a lot of drugs interact. You don't know what drugs are interacting, you know. Like I found out one drug I have interacts with another drug and has slows your heart down. And, oh, my God, that's not a good idea. So I had to stop taking one of the drugs or the other.
Even supplements,
you know, and that's not something
with.
That doctors don't always realize, don't always think about the interactions of other drugs you're taking.
Well,
you know?
I can verify that because when I went to take care of my parents, my dad and my stepmom both had like 30 drugs, different drugs each. And they had three different doctors. So I packed them up and I went to each doctor and I said, you need to contact each other. You need to write all these drugs down because my parents aren't getting better. They're getting worse. And I'm not going to give them all these drugs. And what really struck me, though, you're going to like this one, is that when I went to the pharmacist to fill a prescription, he said, I can't fill that prescription. I go, what do you mean? It's from a doctor. And he goes, I can't fill it. And I go, and why not? And he said, because it'll kill him because he's taking this. I'm like, oh, my God. You mean I'm going to kill my father?
Yeah.
So I packed them all up, and I made each of those doctors connect. And you know what they went down to?
Good.
Like about seven drugs, and a few of them were vitamins. Yeah.
Wow.
So you can't always believe the doctors.
Many specialists don't know what other drugs are being used for other specialties, and don't even look at the side effects that can happen with other drugs. You know, it's important for you to understand what you're taking.
Well, I believe that about injections too. You know, it's important to know what they're injecting into your body, you know, and people don't ask questions. So I'm glad you're doing this, as a registered nurse and a forensic expert, because people could accidentally give someone, the wrong drugs. You know, so if people don't realize how important that is to make sure they're not, you know, going to kill themselves or make themselves ill.
I was taking an osteoporosis injection, and it turned out having a lot of dental problems because of it. And that was one of the minor, they had it listed in a really small line on possible side effects and said hardly anybody ever get it. But, I got it. So, you know, and I had to stop taking it.
Well, always say, what if you're that one? You know, what if you're that one they injected and you dropped dead? What if you're that one that you got paralyzed from? You know, what if you're that one, you know, you're perfectly healthy person and they jab you or they give you a drug? And legal drugs, not just talking about illegal drugs, but illegal drugs.
Exactly.
So it could be either way. And you know that the big pharma covers up so many of those lawsuits for so many years That mm-hmm. because they
oh yeah they do
they first get all the money so they don't care how many people die or are injured mm-hmm. because they got mm-hmm. billions mm-hmm. and billions of dollars. So if they have to pay
right.
out $1 billion
right.
dollars to a few people that got injured or, you know, their families died or whatever, they don't care
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
they made more profits than it is mm-hmm. to pay out $1 billion. So everybody got paid and some people died in the meantime or got injured.
Yeah.
So tell us about
yeah.
So that's a wonderful thing you're going to do, speaking at that conference. So Nursing the Evidence. Your forensic
yeah, that's
series.
My fictional series that has been optioned, and we hopefully once the strike is over, we'll be able to start producing it. And, you know, and I hope to educate people through the storyline of different things that nurses do, that forensic nurses do. Maybe even
yeah,
a couple of spin-offs too.
I always call nurses angels because you know they do so much for people. And things
mm-hmm.
that most people don't want to do. And so it's
right,
called
right, right.
So
right.
Is it going to be a series? Is that what you're...
It's going to be a series, I hope so. At least that's
and,
what we're planning on, right. Yeah.
Is it called Nursing the Evidence? Is that it? Is that the title?
That's my title. I don't know if it'll change or not once we start production. I call
okay.
that because we take care of... Because we take care of Evans, we don't doctor it.
Mm, okay. And what is does it have like a theme throughout your series? Is it a thriller?
Well,
is it, what?
It takes place in Georgia. At the current storyline, if they keep the same storyline, takes place in Georgia with a woman who testified against a serial killer, and he escapes, and she has to go into witness protection, and she but she doesn't trust the people in the marshal's office. She thinks one of them is a leak, and so she goes to a different place, and then she has to in the small Georgia town has to help people solve crimes and use her forensic knowledge without exposing who she really is and try and keep her soul a secret. So hopefully it'll interest people enough to keep watching. And most people don't know that coroners, the local coroners are elected. Most local coroners do not have any medical knowledge. They might be hardware store owners. They might be funeral owners. There's only a few of them that either are elected or have medical knowledge. And many
really,
nurses are trying to become coroners as well, yeah.
Wow, that's interesting because they sign off the death certificates.
Yeah, most of them don't know what they're even signing off.
Wow.
Exactly.
That's amazing to me, absolutely amazing. I mean, there's like a black guy that died, and it was a huge national story. And in the end... I always questioned because I saw the video where he was inside the car, great big guy, and he had a rap sheet and everything with drugs and all that. And I heard him watching the police video that most people I don't think saw. I only saw it one time on the air. And but I'm very in tuned into law enforcement because I work for him, and then also I also started the movement for justice, you know, advocate for
mm-hmm.
justice. And so I listened to things like that, and he was begging them to let him out of the car and lay him on the ground, and he couldn't breathe. And so they did what he told them to do, and then the officer did something that they're trained to do. And he was alive. I don't want to mention his name because I will stir a bunch of people up. But he was alive when they put him on the ambulance, and he was alive in the ER. So he didn't die
mm-hmm.
until he was at the hospital, but they charged the cop with murder, which was very, to me, I'm like, well, was it because of politics and all this? Because the cop didn't kill him by his action. It was a horrible, and they shouldn't do that. I agree with all that. But that wasn't the cause of death. The cause of death that came out with all these long lists of drugs like fentanyl and all these different horrible drugs that kill people. And they said that's what he actually died from, was poisoned, the drugs poisoned him. And so, but the cop was charged with murder. So these things happen when you're talking about what you're talking about, the drugs and how people don't really know about them and what they can actually do to your body, especially when you're talking illegal drugs.
Right.
So I think it's really important that you're bringing that to people's attention. And so, so why do you think this story, other than my opinion, is important to be seen now in this day and age?
You're seeing the evidence? Because people don't know about what we as forensic nurses do. And I'm hoping that I wrote the book, the nonfiction book, Forensic Nursing, Law Enforcement Secret Weapons. That's a nonfiction book of case studies from St. Martin's Press, which I think is still out available in paperback. But anyway, I didn't realize that most people don't know what forensic nurses do, and I want to educate. As a writer and a nurse, I felt important to educate people about what we do. And so that was my goal. You know, as I said, I think people learn better through fiction, because through osmosis they can hear things and they say, oh, I know that, and I'm like that, you know, and then they pay attention to the storyline, even though it's not them in the story, rather than just plain facts. A lot of times people
you're
get
absolutely
bored with
right.
facts.
You're absolutely right, because Obama's Thoris is a fictional political satire, and that's exactly what people from around the world said to me. You know, they said, oh, my God, you know, you really need to get out and talk about that, because I've been thinking about that, you know, and da-da-da-da-da. But fiction does awaken people and their minds and expand them. And it's, you know, it makes them think outside of the box and, oh, maybe, I'm not the only person that thinks that. And so what about Heaven Help Me?
Heaven Help Me, as I said, is a comedy, is a dramedy. And I talk about human trafficking, and I try to educate people a little bit about human trafficking in that story. But it is about, it's a mother-in-law that never got along with her daughter-in-law, and she's murdered in the process of a crime, and comes back as a ghost to have her daughter-in-law, the detective, solve the crime, and decides that she wants to help her daughter-in-law in the future to solve crimes. So it's a comedy, but it's got dramatic moments to it as well, and it's won a lot of awards. So they're interested in producing that as well. So we will see what happens. You never know. I mean, with the strike, I can't plan on anything for sure these days. But hopefully
count on anything for sure these days, period.
That's true.
So you also won an award for your pilot in his name. Tell us a little bit about that.
In His Name is about the massacre of the Jews in York, England in 1190. We were not allowed to do regular jobs. We could only be moneylenders, and many of the nobles borrowed money from us, wanting to go on Richard's Third Crusade, and didn't want to pay back the money, so they decided to kill us. One of the tricks they often used would be to take an orphan boy and drain his blood and say that we use his blood from Passover matzahs, and which we didn't do, because we don't have blood in any of our products at all. And that was the excuse that got the mob riled up. And, of course, the falsehood that we killed Jesus, which we didn't do. And the mob went and attacked the Jewish population, and they ended up having to kill themselves ala Masada and taking their own lives rather than being murdered by the mob and forced to conversion. And that was in 1190 in York, England.
That sounds really interesting.
As I said, it's won awards already, so... And hopefully I'll get one of the networks interested in it, or maybe do it as a feature. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah. So what do you do? Do you attend a lot of meetings and people and join a lot of groups?
I do.
What would you suggest to our audience who write?
Well, I'm very active in a group called Roadmap Writers, which is very good for people. It's an honest group and helps people find representation and develop their skills, and has a leveling up where you take certain courses and take certain seminars and you become better at your writing. And then Joey Tuccio, who's the head of it, introduces you, or helps you be introduced to various execs and representatives. And I think in their 7 years, they have gotten 358 people, writers, represented already. And they're very supportive.
Network
and
writers?
All over the world. Any type of script writer. And they have book writers as well.
Yeah, I joined a group too, but after the 2 years, I didn't. It kind of died, but I was in a group too for script writing, and I actually have a stuff I think is really good. and then we got locked down, and it just kind of everything went dead. But I still have it, and it's
well, you might want to submit
fun.
It to Roadmap Writers and see what they think of it, and see where they think your level would be if they can help you promote it.
I'd like to do that. Okay, I will do that. And so that's good information for everybody who likes to write. And also, you have copies of Red Sea, Dead Sea for sale on your site. What is your website?
Red Sea, Dead Sea was a Jewish grandmother mystery series, the first in the series where the Jewish grandmother goes to Israel and ends up working for Mossad because she helps solve a crime that they can't solve. And Logan's Land on my site as well, which is my Western with a female protagonist, because it went out of print, and I have the copies available on my site available, which I can autograph and send to people if they're interested. My site is www.seritastevens.com, SERITASTEVENS.com.
That's fantastic, Sarita, and it's always a pleasure to have you on Colombo Chronicles. I always enjoy all the things you're doing and the information you are proactive, and your efforts are coming to fruition. So God bless you and keep up the good work, and we'll talk to you again soon and find
Thank
out what
you.
You're
and you too. Keep up your good work as well.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right, talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye. And Sarita has left the building, and Rose Colombo is going to have to leave the building in just a moment, but I want to tell you, remember, injustices can happen to you, and they can happen to me. Together, we can make a positive difference, because you're never alone when you tune into Colombo Chronicles Live. God bless you, and God bless America.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Well, my friends, time flies, and now is the time to say goodbye. Thanks so much for being part of the Colombo Chronicles family. You are appreciated. Please do it now. Bookmark. Push that like, share, and follow button. Oh, and don't forget to comment below and stay in touch. Make your family part of the Colombo family. Until next Wednesday at noon, remember, God loves you, and so does the Rose.